love being in Brooklyn. This is great.
And with your help, we're going to win here in New York. Thank you.
Yowza.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it's not.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep.
Yes, I'm stuck in the middle.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. Up in Oregon on 91.7 FM KYAQ on the Central Coast and 106.7 FM KSO in Cozy Cottage Grove. Out in Pennsylvania on 93 FM WLRI in Lancaster. Out in Hawaii on 88.5 FM KAKU, the voice of Maui. Up in Minneapolis, St. Paul on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. And of course, coast to coast and around the world, streaming on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation Radio, or not, Radio Free Brooklyn, oh hello Brooklyn, GDPR Nashville, Detour Talk in East Tennessee, and blanketing the globe 5 days a week on Radio Sputnik. This is the Bradcast. I'm your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, an all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you for joining us for another action-packed, thrilling adventure. And we do have one of those that we call the Bradcast today. Because after several quiet, some might say blessedly quiet, quiet weeks without any presidential debates, Democratic presidential candidates Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders took the stage once more. Who knows if it'll be for the last time or not. It's the last one scheduled for now. They took the stage at the Brooklyn Navy Yard on Thursday night for another presidential debate. The CNN-sponsored debate was very lively, was very raucous, and at times quite contentious. The warm, fuzzy, sort of lovey-dovey atmosphere from earlier debates between these two was all but gone. Actually, I'd say it was completely gone, to be frank, this time around. They went directly at each other pretty much from the jump, and not in a pretend CNN gloves are now off kind of way, but they really did go at each other this time around and press each other for answers to questions in ways that, frankly, it would have been nice if the mainstream corporate media had done themselves long ago. Josh Marshall over at TPM tweeted at one point, "What is going on here?" He said, "I feel like Trump's going to come on the stage and ask these two to take a deep breath and think for a moment about civility." Later, Josh tweeted, I'm not sure I've heard two candidates yell at each other at such a sustained clip for two full hours, going on to point out that they're both over 65. And that is stamina, he says. Yes, indeed it is. The two candidates sparred over criminal justice reform, Wall Street money, guns, foreign policy, including a rather remarkable exchange on Israel and Palestine, on Social Security, the failed war on drugs, and even, Desi Doyen, I know you were very delighted about this, even on climate change.
Oh, yeah.
With several questions, not just one, but several questions related to climate change, fracking.
Carbon. Energy. I was in hog heaven.
I know you were. A carbon tax. They discussed a carbon tax.
I know.
But so while we finally had some smart conversation on both climate and Israel and much more, it should be noted, as Ari Berman at The Nation pointed out, we've now had 21 presidential debates and no questions on voting rights, despite 17 states with new voting restrictions in 2016, and this being the first presidential election in 50 years without the Voting Rights Act fully enforced. But, oh well, I guess you can't have everything. Des, you got your green questions. I got nothing on the voting.
Ah, well.
Anyway.
Have everything.
I know. The Brooklyn debate comes just days before this Tuesday's big primary election. in the Empire State, with recent polling in New York showing Hillary Clinton still with a fairly healthy 13-point lead or so over Bernie Sanders, who has nonetheless won, I think, seven of the late last eight nominating contests. Might be eight of the last nine at this point. I've lost track. So was Bernie able to close the gap between himself and Hillary at all on Thursday night in the Big Apple? And more importantly, did the voters actually learn anything from the lively and at times kind of brutal face-off? Here to help us make sense of it all, not just Desi Doyen, but also one of our returning debate coverage champs, Jackie Schechner, longtime journalist, former CNN and current TV reporter. She also worked in D.C. as the National Communications Director for Healthcare for America Now, the nation's largest healthcare reform campaign, as well as for Al Gore's Climate Reality Project. Jackie Schechner, welcome back to the broadcast.
Thanks. You guys have me well trained by now. I cheered when I heard questions about climate change.
Did Yay. You? Good. Well, see, I thought it was Al Gore who might have well trained you, but I'll take it. Also,
no, I give credit to you guys for sure.
We'll take whatever credit we can get. Also, joining us, I'm very excited about this. The great Peter B. Collins is with us from the Peter B. Collins Show for news and comment and brilliant interviews and insight, where I personally spent many a year appearing as a weekly guest back in the day. And I even still pull out a few helpful clips every now and again from those programs, Peter, when helpful, even on this show. Welcome to the broadcast, PBC.
I'm delighted to be with you, and I was trying to calculate exactly how many hours you worked for free appearing on my radio show, and exactly what kind of deficit I have in the broadcast accounting department.
Yes, you do quite a bit, actually, but I would point out that it's all a bit of a blur now, whatever the hell happened back then during those Bush years. But I'm fairly certain that you, Peter, were the first one to ever be, let's say, foolish enough to entrust me as a guest host for some ridiculous reason. So I just want to let listeners know, if they have any problems with the broadcast, please feel free to blame my friend Peter B. Collins for somehow making it all possible years ago.
It's a virus and there's no cure.
Indeed. Okay, guys, let me start with you, Peter, since it's your first debate show with us. CNN and the corporate media always characterize these things as, the gloves were off and the candidates went at it, et cetera. But they really did go at it last night. It's not just me, right? Was that a surprise or to be expected by this point as you see it, Peter?
It was quite intense, much more intense than any of the preceding debates, and it really is because Bernie Sanders has become much more aggressive. And he opened up a bunch of new lines of attack and positioning last night that I'm grateful for. You referenced many of them in your introduction, Brad. And I also thought that Hillary Clinton is a terrific debater. She is remarkable on her feet. She doesn't stumble, doesn't do a lot of, what am I trying to say? She doesn't have a Rick Perry moment where she forgets the 3 points she's trying to make.
Right.
And, I don't support Hillary, but I do respect her as certainly a qualified candidate. And like Sanders, I think he scored well when he raised issues about her judgment on critical matters. And so I would give, Sanders the net edge on the night, but I don't count Clinton out. And in terms of its impact, we have to recognize that the New York State primary is a closed party primary.
Mm-hmm.
And so with the polling numbers that you cited, Brad, Bernie has a huge challenge, and he's going to need more than a bottle of holy water from the Vatican to pull off a stunning upset on Tuesday night.
Which is where Bernie Sanders traveled right after that debate on Thursday night. I believe he's speaking at the Vatican. Jackie, for all the bickering that we've seen between Sanders and Clinton supporters this cycle, I don't think it comes even close yet to equaling the vitriol I recall between the Obama and Clinton supporters back in 2008. But I don't know if any of those debates back in 2008, while they were, very tense, very dramatic. I don't think they ever got quite as, I don't know if ugly and brutal is the word here, but as tough as the Clinton and Sanders debate got last night. Am I remembering that correctly to your recollection, Jackie?
Well, I think it seems to have faded over time, but I do remember being frustrated. I was a big Obama supporter and was frustrated with the way that Clinton's campaign was attacking him. I thought that it should have been more cordial, and so if I remember correctly, I wasn't pleased with the rhetoric back then either. But you have to also give credit to where the networks are taking these debates, because I think that what's happening on the Republican side has caused the networks to want to ramp it up on the Democratic side as well. And if you think about the first question that went out last night, I mean, basically it was Bernie Sanders, do you really think that Hillary Clinton is unqualified,
right,
or that she has bad judgment, right? So it started out, not tell us why you're going to be the best candidate, but tell us why you think she's not. And when you start with questioning like that, that's the tone you set for the night.
And indeed, let me get right to that question. But before we do, since Peter, since you brought it up, and we usually like to go around the table here, you said you are not a Clinton supporter. Does that mean you are a supporter of Bernie Sanders at this point?
Yes, and you know, in my podcast, I've made the case. I have many criticisms of Senator Sanders, particularly on foreign policy. Mm-hmm. He addressed some of that last night. But my bottom line is that I support Sanders over Clinton, and I will be voting for Bernie in the June 7th primary here in California. I'm not a Democrat, by the way. I'm an independent. The Cali speak is I state no party preference.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, the way the system works in California, I can go to the polls and request a Democratic ballot, which I will. And yes, I will vote for Sanders.
I'm sorry to hear you're not going in for Ted Cruz. Jackie, at last time we spoke, Jackie, I believe you were leaning Sanders is how you characterized it. Are you still leaning in that same direction?
Yeah, I am still leaning in the same direction, and not because I'm too lazy to stand up.
Yes.
I think that, you know, I like what he's doing. I like what he's saying. I don't think Clinton helps herself any when she stonewalls on transcripts. I will vote for him in the primary, but most likely, unless something goes horribly awry between now and June. But I also will support whoever the Democratic nominee happens to be. And I think that that's what's most important at this point, is to say that I will support who's got the country's best interests at heart. And I think that will be whoever wins on the Democratic side.
Which, of course, raises an issue that I'd love to talk about, but we haven't time for. We've been talking about it quite a bit here, the whole Bernie or bust idea. Maybe we'll get to it a bit later in the show. But let me jump in to our first, well, as you referenced, Jackie, that first question out of the box, that was about Sanders calling Hillary unqualified to be president last week. He had cited a Washington Post headline saying that her camp had called him unqualified, and he reacted by calling her unqualified due to her relationship with big money interests and so forth. They have both since stated, I think, pretty unequivocally that the other is, in fact, qualified to be president. And Peter, I know you had some specific thoughts on all of this that I want to ask you about. But let me play a part of this exchange where Sanders said that what he was really talking about was not whether she was qualified, but whether she had the best judgment to be president. And she responded in kind by hitting him for the way the New York Daily News characterized an interview that they did, describing how he planned to break up the too big to fail banks, that he didn't really have a way to go about that. Here is some of that pretty loaded exchange, and then we'll get some thoughts from you.
Talk about judgment and talk about the kinds of problems he had answering questions about even his core issue, breaking up the banks. When asked, he could not explain how that would be done. When asked about a number of foreign policy issues, he could not answer about Afghanistan, about Israel, about counterterrorism. I think you need to have the judgment on day one to be both president and commander-in-chief.
And let's talk about judgment, about the worst foreign policy blunder in the modern history of this country. I led the opposition to that war. Secretary Clinton voted for that war. Let's talk about super PACs and 501c4s. Do we really feel confident about a candidate saying that she's going to bring change in America when she is so dependent on big money interests? I don't think so.
It was really like two dueling campaign rallies, more than a debate at times. Peter, a lot to unpack there in that clip, but the media is the fact that the media is still raising these points about Bernie Sanders' comments last week, calling her unqualified. That seems to underscore not only Jackie's point that they are looking for a fight, but something that you said, Peter, in an interview recently, that you believe Bernie was swift-boated by the media here. Please explain.
Well, and I think Hillary engaged in, repeating the memes of the swift-boating several times in the debate last night. Mm-hmm. So let me first explain why I apply the term from the 2004 takedown of John Kerry mm-hmm. to the present tense. And that is that swift boating was a very effective way of throwing John Kerry off message, on the defensive, and ultimately, I believe, it contributed to his defeat. And what they did is, instead of attacking John Kerry for being the elitist windsurfer, we remember that
right.
video.
Oh, yes, yeah. I do.
They went after his greatest strength, which was his bio as a Vietnam War veteran who had then come back and opposed the war. And so by swift-boating him on his strongest points, they undermined his credibility with many swing voters, and that cost him the election. So what is the Clinton campaign doing? Well, on the night of the Wisconsin primary, they leaked to CNN that they are going to disqualify and defeat Bernie Sanders. Then they launched all of these questions about his credibility. They treat him like he's a doddering old man who doesn't know what he's doing. And in particular, they used the April 1st interview with the editorial board of the New York Daily News mm-hmm. to try to support these contentions. And I believe that most people have not read the transcript from the Daily News, because if you do, you cannot come away feeling that Sanders didn't know what he was talking about, doesn't have a plan to break up the banks, or that he couldn't answer questions. The one question he declined to answer was a trick question about a recent court decision related to MetLife that had not yet been published on April 1st. And so he gave an honest answer that I haven't studied that, and I don't have a response for you. And they have used that to suggest that he doesn't have an answer to a multitude of questions and issues. And then the piling on began with that leading headline in the Washington Post that said, Clinton asks if Sanders is qualified. That's the way she phrased it.
Mm-hmm.
Then he misquoted that, and that is his, you know, to his detriment. He claimed, quote unquote, she has said, I'm unqualified. Then he riffed on that and said, well, if that's the case, then she's unqualified because of Wall Street money, mm-hmm. and he ticked off several other issues. Well, I would have used the phrase disqualified, not unqualified. Mm. But that said, the trap was set, the meme was launched, and then we saw the very next day the fact checker at the Washington Post said, no, you know, Clinton didn't actually say he isn't qualified. She just asked. She just asked if he is qualified.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a Washington Post editorial the same day that suggested that he doesn't know his core issue, breaking up the banks. Then the next day, Paul Krugman unloaded in the New York Times with very similar threads. Again, taking the Daily News interview, cherry-picking out-of-context quotes, and then claiming that you can broadly paint Bernie Sanders as uninformed and out of touch. Now, this is, in my view, swift voting, pure and simple, and Hillary engaged in it on several occasions in the debate last night.
Was it? And I'm going to play one of those clips in a moment. But so when you describe this as swift voting, is that a swift voting effort by the campaign and the media, or just the campaign and the media took the bait, as you see it? In other words, is the media purposely working with the Hillary campaign to try to hurt Bernie Sanders, as you see it, Peter B?
That is a question I raise. I can't prove that Paul Krugman mm-hmm. Has read the campaign talking points, but they're widely available. And for him to use, you know, strikingly similar statements suggests to me that, you know, he may not be calling and saying, hey, what should I put in my column tomorrow? But he certainly is aware of what the campaign is trying to do. Pardon me. And he has been using his column to attack Sanders and belittle him and keep reminding people that Krugman has determined that Sanders cannot win. I find it really offensive, and I can't, you know, say that there is direct coordination between the media and the campaign, but in the Washington Post editorial, they first challenged him on whether he knows how to break up the banks, and then they raised the question, well, why do we need to break up the banks anyway? And well, Sanders actually answered that in his preamble at the New York Daily News interview.
Let me play a little bit.
I wanted to jump in real quickly. Just to add a little bit of context and perspective, we're talking about a nominating contest where Donald Trump may be the GOP nominee. So I think that Sanders and Clinton going back and forth and who may or may not be qualified is a little ridiculous. And I understand it's happening, but it does seem incredibly unnecessary given that whoever the GOP nominee is going to be, and most likely, I mean, if we take a look at how it's playing out, it's going to be someone like Donald Trump. I don't think qualification is a problem on the Democratic side.
Well, no, it's not. It's not, Jackie. But let me play a clip, and I'll let you respond again here, because yes, you're absolutely right. But in the choice between the two of them, I think it's a fair enough issue who is more qualified. But it has not been fair the way that it has been put across by the media, I would argue by the Clinton campaign. But we have seen this a lot from her in these recent debates. I think I complained about this last time. Here she is again. She had sort of turned Bernie's attacks on her and her acceptance of these huge sums of money from billionaires and corporate interest. She turned that somehow as an attack once again on President Obama.
Make no mistake about it. This is not just an attack on me. It's an attack on President Obama. President Obama. Let me tell you why. President Obama had a super PAC when he ran, and President Obama was not at all influenced when he made the decision to pass and sign Dodd-Frank, the toughest regulations on Wall Street. This is a phony attack that is designed to raise questions when there is no evidence or support to undergird the insinuations.
Okay, Jackie, there she goes again, taking these attacks that I think are legitimate attacks from Bernie and turning them into, oh, she's attacking President Obama. To me, that seems fundamentally dishonest. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like when she does it. I don't think it's necessary. I think it's very strange that she's all of a sudden suction cupped herself to the president. It just doesn't sound genuine or sincere. And no, it's true. And I think with
I just like that word.
I think, you know, a woman who's got a credibility issue in terms of sincerity, I don't think those sorts of tactics are doing her any favors. I don't think Bernie Sanders' intention is to attack President Obama. That at no point do I think that he's against the president. And I think she needs to stand on her own merits and stop wrapping herself around him. For me, those are one of the things that make her unlikable in my book. There's a sincerity chip missing when she makes those sorts of arguments.
Well, it must be working, though. Hang on, Peter. It must be working because she continues to do it, even though it seems on its surface fundamentally dishonest, and you heard the people in Brooklyn even booing when she did it. Peter?
Well, there are a couple of things here. It is a very clever tactic on the Clinton campaign's part. And let's go back to the failed Al Gore campaign when he didn't embrace his Democratic predecessor, and many people believe that was the fatal flaw in that campaign strategy. But Sanders has a very tight a tightrope wire to walk here, because he doesn't want to appear to be running against President Obama or excessively critical of him. But implicitly, he is saying that, you know, the president didn't do enough to clean up Wall Street, hasn't used Dodd-Frank to break up the banks that are bigger than they were too big to fail in 2008, and most notably, not a single Wall Street executive has been indicted. And so they're allowed to pay fines in the billions of dollars that are taken essentially from shareholders, but the individuals are not held to account. And I wish Sanders would edge out into that territory, but he recognizes that, you know, he's going to walk a plank there, and Hillary can cut that plank off and say, oh, well, you're not really a Democrat, and you don't really support the president. But since she launched that back in the second or third debate, she has gotten away with separating herself from President Obama on a number of issues, most notably now Libya and the Syria no-fly zone. And nobody, you know, turns that against her and says, oh, well, Hillary, are you criticizing the popular Democratic president of the United States?
Right. It's an attack on Obama when you don't support his foreign policy in Syria. Yeah, that doesn't happen. Here was a point, though, that I do think Bernie should have been prepared for a bit better. He was asked to name one decision. He's been, you know, obviously criticizing her because of all the money that she gets from Wall Street, and was asked to name one decision that shows that she favored the big banks because of the money that she has received from
them. You've consistently criticized Secretary Clinton for accepting money from Wall Street. Can you name one decision that she made as senator that shows that she favored banks because of the money she received?
The obvious decision is when the greed and recklessness and illegal behavior of Wall Street brought this country into the worst economic downturn since the Great Recession, the Great Depression of the 30s. The obvious response to that is that you got a bunch of fraudulent operators and that they have got to be broken up. That was my view way back. Now, Secretary Clinton was busy giving speeches to Goldman Sachs for $225,000 a speech. So the proper response, in my view, is we should break them up. And that's what my legislation does.
So he didn't really answer the question, Jackie Schechner. Shouldn't he have been more prepared for that? And with that said, is it really germane to the question at hand? In other words, whether she has or not done them any favors, she's not president yet. She still, you know, has that opportunity to do them favors. So I guess two questions built in there, Jackie. Shouldn't he have been more prepared?
Yeah, I mean, he should have. I was live tweeting last night, and what I noticed, what he seemed to be stumbling a bit on the specifics, not only of, you know, anything in particular she'd done, but also on how he would break up the big banks in particular, and that's a subject that he should own no matter what. I mean, if that's the core, the income inequality argument is the core of his campaign, he should have specifics on any and all aspects of it. So, yes, I think there should be some examples. But at the same time, the fact that she's not willing to release these transcripts and she keeps giving these ridiculous arguments that she will when everybody else does, when he's really the only person she's running against at this point, just feeds into the narrative that she has something to hide. So without giving an absolute specific, I think he's still got a valuable argument there. It would be helpful had he been able to come up with something in particular, but I don't know that he necessarily lost much ground because she's not helping herself at all with this whole transcript argument.
Peter, before I get to a break, since Jackie brought up the transcripts that she will not release from her speeches to investment banks that she reportedly received millions for, her response was, I'm not going to do it if everyone else won't. And Bernie said, I don't have any to release. Right. And the Republicans, that's a whole different issue right now. And then she said Bernie should release his tax returns. He said, yes, I will release my tax returns. So, A, what's the holdup in releasing his tax returns long ago? And B, Peter, since you've worked as a consultant yourself to various campaigns, how would you advise her on these transcripts if she was your candidate here?
Well, first of all, Sanders has no excuse for delaying the release of his tax returns and allowing that issue to fester. And the fact that Jane does his taxes and they're at home, I mean, I'm sorry, that doesn't wash for me. And on her transcripts, this is really just a corner that Sanders has been able to back her into. She doesn't want to release these because she secured confidentiality agreements. When she was paid $250,000 to talk to a realtors association in San Francisco, Everybody's cell phones were confiscated. Nobody was allowed to take pictures or videos or any recordings. And so she's over a barrel here, and he knows it. And it's a great way to continue to remind people of all the speaking money that she took. And she, you know, I believe that she gave a lot of that money away to charity, but she never mentions that. And, you know, I do think that the opportunism that it shows and the vast wealth that the Clintons have rolled up since they left the White House broke in 2000 is stunning. And that of an, you know, in and of itself, it shows how separate the Clintons are from the lives of average Americans. And when she went to the Verizon picket line and stumbled through some talking points with no conviction and then got into that big black SUV and was driven away, the optics of that, you know, didn't work at all in her favor. And when Sanders needled her about, you know, speaking fees from Verizon, which is a fact, she had no response. I do think that it would be in her best interest to release these, but there is stuff in the speeches that would be worse than not releasing them. I think we have to conclude that.
That must be the case, but I think it's going to come up over and over and over again if she is the nominee in the general election, and I think that could potentially be very damaging. I got to get to a break here, guys. Much more ahead, including the very progressive and very popular fight, popular at least across the board with both Democrats and Republican voters alike, if not necessarily with the elected Republican officials, the fight to raise the minimum wage. And incredibly enough, smart discussion on Israel and even climate change. All of that and more straight ahead on the broadcast with Peter B. Collins and Jackie Schechner and Desi Doyen. I'm Brad Friedman. Stay tuned.
You do not support raising the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour. As president, if a Democratic Congress put a $15 minimum wage bill on your desk, would you sign it?
Oh, of course I would. And I will work as hard as I can to raise the minimum wage. I always have. But what I have also said, we've got to be smart about it.
I am sure a lot of people are very surprised to learn that you supported raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour.
Wait a minute. I have stood on the debate stage with Senator Sanders eight prior times.
Excuse me.
I have said the
Secretary,
exact same
Senator,
thing.
Please.
If we can raise it to $15 in New York or Los Angeles
Secretary,
or Seattle,
the viewers,
let's do it.
If you're both screaming at each other, the viewers won't be able to hear either of you.
Yes, welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com with our post-debate coverage of the Thursday night Democratic presidential debate in Brooklyn when Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders squared off for what could be the last time. So much to cover here. Going back through the debate again this morning, it was so substantive in truth. So let's get right back to it with my guests, Jackie Schechner and Peter B. Collins. All right, guys, the Sanders, as you heard in that opening clip there, Sanders has been long calling for a $15 an hour federal minimum wage. Clinton has been calling for raising it to $12. All of that in the wake of places like California and New York just last week raising their own state minimum wage to $15 an hour. And suddenly Hillary Clinton last night seemed to suggest that, yes, she too was actually in favor of a $15 minimum wage all along.
I have said from the very beginning that I supported the fight for 15. We want to raise it higher than it ever has been. We will set a national level of 12 and then urge any place that can go above it to go above it. Going from 725 to 12 is a huge difference. I want to get something done, and I think setting the goal to get to 12 is the way to go. But of course, if we have a Democratic Congress, We will go to 15.
Jackie Schechner, is it smart politics here for Hillary to call for a lower wage because it's, you know, somehow less, I don't know, less scary, somehow more possible, akin to the way the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, eventually got passed by not setting the goals too high? Is she smart there to do that, or is she missing the boat?
Well, it's in line with her rhetoric in general, right? I mean, she's all about practicality. And I think that the problem for her is that while she's not necessarily wrong in thinking about how you get things like this passed through Congress, what we like to hear in campaigns is aspirational rhetoric. And so Sanders is saying what people want to hear and want to see happen, and she's saying, I don't think that's doable. I'll do it if I can, but I don't think that's doable. And she's not wrong, but it's not encouraging. It's not inspirational. It's not the rhetoric that people like to hear when they want to believe in somebody. So it's a little bit of a message of can't, as opposed to we can.
Right.
And people don't like to vote on practicality. That's just not, it's not going to get people out to the polls. So I don't know strategically, just from a messaging perspective, I know she's trying to stay true to where she usually sits, which is on the side of practicality, but I'm not sure that that's resonating.
Peter B. Collins, a debate in a Democratic debate over whether the minimum wage should be $12 or $15. Would we even be having that debate if Bernie Sanders wasn't in the race at this point?
Cesar Chavez never said, no se puede.
Right.
Aim low, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And honestly, the dynamics of this, I believe this is where Sanders won the debate last night, because Hillary was, doing different yoga postures to try to reconcile 15 and 12 and coming from 7 1/4, and Trump doesn't want to increase it by a penny. And it reminds me of an interview I did with the late Sonny Bono when he was running for the Senate from California back in 92. And in the space of 45 seconds, he took three different positions on the defense budget at the time. And Hillary, she can't please anybody with the answer that she gave last night. And I think that, you know, people see that just over the arc of this 9-month campaign, that Sanders has been calling for 15, and let's be fair, these laws in both New York and California get to 15 6 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not an immediate overnight, doubling of mm-hmm. the minimum wage. It is incremental. And yet, we show that Sanders, through the aspirations that he offered, did create an opening for Governors Cuomo and Brown to make a move in this direction that is really substantial. And I think that it undermines the pragmatic argument that Clinton makes on virtually every other issue. That's pie in the sky. We can't go that far. Don't promise them free college education. And I think most people say, look, he may not be able to produce, but who is going to say, I will vote against the things that Sanders has articulated?
Desi Doyen, you had a thought.
Yeah, I was just, I disagree a little bit with you guys as far as, whether or not Bernie did better on the minimum wage argument, because I think what Clinton is clearly doing is positioning herself for the general election, for those Republicans and those independent voters who would tend to vote Republican, to make it sound like, see, I'm a moderate, I'm not going to scare you, especially if you're a big business owner. I'm not going to make mm-hmm. things really, really hard for you. So I think that that's I don't necessarily agree with it, but I think it might be an exceptionally effective tactic at this point for those people who are in states who are like, well, maybe I would vote for her because she's not this, crazy fringe candidate who's going to really push big business and small business off the ledge.
So somehow raising it only to 12 is going to be more beloved than...
hey, I can work with you. Talk to me. I will work with you on this. So I think that it's more of a negotiation tactic, not that it's, where we need to be, but it is a tactic.
All right,
Desi, to your point, she made another argument later on when they were talking about trade deals and how, as mm-hmm. Secretary of State, she had promoted fracking internationally.
Yeah.
And she made this dig at Sanders that, she wants to work with corporations to
right.
expand exports. leaving the clear implication that he is so antagonistic to them that he couldn't promote American business internationally. I thought he parried that pretty well by saying, oh, there are a lot of great companies, a lot of green companies that I'd love to promote around the world, but it's not going to be General Electric.
Let me play this very quickly before we get to the, because I want to make sure we have time for the Israel and the environment discussion. But since you mentioned this, Peter, this clip number four, Des, they ask him about, they ask Bernie about, well, we'll just play this.
Senator, you've slammed companies like General Electric
yes.
and Verizon for moving jobs outside of the United States. The CEO of Verizon called your views contemptible. He says you are, quote, uninformed on this issue and disconnected from reality. Given your obvious contempt for large American corporations, how would you, as President of the United States, be able to effectively promote American businesses around the world?
First of all, the word contempt is not right. There's some great businesses who treat their workers and the environment with respect. Verizon happens not to be one of them. By the way, turns out that both Verizon and General Electric in a given year paid nothing in federal income tax despite making billions in profit.
Senator.
I just wanted to get that in because, Jackie.
What a loaded question.
Yeah, you worked at CNN some years ago, so I'm going to blame mm-hmm. you for what Wolf Blitzer just did. The obvious contempt for large businesses, is that either appropriate or accurate
for a debate
moderator?
No, it's a terribly worded question. I mean, I don't know that there's any, like, corporate collusion or that there's any, like, network mandate to take a certain angle with debates. At least there wasn't when I was there. But I think sometimes the anchors and reporters' own personal opinions get in the way of good moderating or good reporting. And it seems like that was a particularly uncomfortable way to take that question. I mean, he could have just said, you know, given some of the things that you said about how corporations are taking advantage of the American economy, mm-hmm. do you think you're able to, whatever the wording was, without having to present it? But again, we're talking about a debate that started off with, do you really think your opponent's not qualified?
So, that's right.
We
set the tone early on for this kind of debate.
That's CNN apologist Jackie Schechner. I'm speaking with her and Peter B. Collins.
Don't do that. You're going to get me into trouble.
I
that's going to hit the internet.
I know. Oh, I'd hate to see that happen, Jackie. All right, let's get to this Israel thing, because this was quite remarkable. Bernie Sanders has said that Israel's response to Palestinians in Gaza was disproportionate to the attack against Israel. And of course, Jackie's best friend, Wolf Blitzer, asked, what do you say to those who say Israel has a right to protect themselves? Which was kind of an odd way to ask that question, but let me play his answer and a bit more from this exchange.
Of course, Israel has a right not only to defend themselves, but to live in peace and security. But we had in the Gaza area, not a very large area, some 10,000 civilians who were wounded and some 1,500 who were killed. Was that a disproportionate attack? The answer is, I believe it was. And let me say something else. As somebody who is 100% pro-Israel, this is not going to be easy. But in the long run, if we are ever going to bring peace to that region, which has seen so much hatred and so much war, we are going to have to treat the Palestinian people with respect and dignity. Right now in Gaza, unemployment is somewhere around 40% and hasn't been rebuilt. Decimated, houses decimated. Healthcare decimated, schools decimated. I believe the United States and the rest of the world have got to work together to help the Palestinian people. That does not make me anti-Israel. That paves the way, I think.
Thank you, Senator.
For an approach that works in the Middle
Thank
East.
Thank you. Secretary.
Alex Burns, the New York Times Metro writer, said that described that as quite a moment in New York primary history. With the Dem repeatedly, electively going on offense in support of an even-handed approach to Israel and the Palestinians. Hillary Clinton was asked if she agreed that Israel must end its disproportionate responses. Let me play a bit of that, and then I'll get to both of your thoughts on this.
And you evaded the answer. He evaded the question. The question is not, does Israel have a right to respond? That's not the debate. Was their response disproportionate? I believe that it was. You have not answered that.
I will certainly be willing to answer it. I think I did answer it by saying that, of course, there have to be precautions taken.
I read Secretary Clinton's statement speech before AIPAC. I heard virtually no discussion at all about the needs of the Palestinian people. Almost none in that speech.
Describing the problem is a lot easier than trying to solve it. And as Secretary of State for President Obama, I was absolutely focused on what was fair and right for the Palestinians. And I believe that as president, I will be able to continue to make progress and get an agreement that will be fair both to the Israelis and the Palestinians.
A final word,
without
Senator,
ever, ever undermining Israel's security.
Peter B. Collins, have we ever heard anything like that in a U.S. presidential a debate, to your memory?
Maybe back in the Carter Ford debate. I think that there were discussions about Israel, and I think that Jimmy Carter, you know, positioned somewhat the way Sanders is today. But I'd have to look that up. That's a weak recollection in my brain. But I do think that this is very significant in a number of ways. Up until this point, Sanders has been really ducking foreign policy issues. He has not taken any strong positions other than the repeated references to the Iraq War, which is, you know, it's significant, but it's ancient history, really. And he did, I think, an incredible job last night of, you know, once again saying that he's 100% pro-Israel, but that he, you know, wants to offer respect and dignity to the Palestinians. He wants to recognize the disproportionality. And I'd like to note that Wolf Blitzer, who asked both questions and who came to CNN from AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, back in the late 1980s, he actually asked them slightly different questions. He asked Sanders, you know, was the Gaza attack in 2014 disproportionate? And what do you say to people who say Israel has a right to defend itself as it sees fit? Well, then Sanders answered that, and you played his answer, but his question to Clinton was slightly different. Do you agree with Senator Sanders that Israel overreacts to Palestinian attacks, and that for peace, Israel must end their disproportionate responses? Now, Sanders didn't say the last part, and Wolf Blitzer ended up broadening the question to all Israeli reactions when Sanders was explicitly talking about the summer of 2014. Mm-hmm. And I believe that was a setup to, you know, enable her to offer these Israeli talking points. And earlier today, I did an interview with Max Blumenthal, the courageous American journalist. He wrote the book Goliath and about the 2014 attack on Gaza. He wrote a book called The 51-Day War. And it's interesting. Everybody knows his dad is Sid Blumenthal, who's very tight with the Clintons. And the Hillary Clinton emails display that in ways that are somewhat embarrassing at times. But Max Blumenthal is unequivocal that he heard Hillary Clinton using the Frank Luntz created message points that Israel uses to advance its framing that it is a victim of the Palestinian assaults, when the real irritant that triggers all this is Israel's occupation. And many people, you know, who support the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement and who are critical of Israeli policy would wish that Sanders went further. But I think this really was historic for him and for the campaign and for this current era, that he was willing to make the very strong statements that he did and actually repeat them.
I must get to our final break here. So very quickly, Jackie Schechner, does the fact that Bernie Sanders is Jewish allow him to offer some more reasoned nuance in this conversation that we simply do not hear in American presidential politics and arguably in national American politics, period?
I mean, I do think that that does give him some qualification that other candidates may not have, and the ability to be a little more critical. As somebody who's not totally steeped in Middle Eastern policy, and I don't follow the Israeli-Palestinian conflict probably as closely as I should, but it is refreshing to hear somebody say, yes, there is an instance where I found a response to be disproportionate, mm-hmm. and not... that doesn't characterize him as anti-Israel. Like, I don't think that to be pro-Israel, you have to be behind Israel on everything at all times. I like to hear that, and I think that speaks to me, that speaks to the sincerity behind Bernie Sanders that I like so much.
Well, and the fact is, you probably don't follow it as closely as you should, because it is so rarely discussed in the media in this way.
True.
If it was discussed like this more often, we'd probably be talking about it more often in those terms. Let me get to a quick break, and we'll come back with more broadcast coverage of the Brooklyn debate between the two Democrats with Jackie Schechner and Peter B. Collins, my guest. I'm Brad Friedman. This is the Bradcast. Don't touch that dial.
Great to be here in New York.
I believe that this country has enormous potential.
Keep New York values at the center of who we are.
If we have the guts to take on the big money interests,
take those New York values to the White House, knock down the barriers that stand in the way.
When millions of people stand up, fight back, and create a government that works for all of us.
To build on the values that we share here in New York.
I'm back. Yes.
And we are back on the Bradcast after the two Democratic presidential candidates, both from New York, sort of. Bernie Sanders, born in Brooklyn. Hillary Clinton, the former two-term U.S. Senator from the Empire State. They had it out on Thursday in what could be the final Democratic presidential debate of this season, depending on how things go in Tuesday's New York primary. And the rest of the contests still beyond it. Our last few minutes here of our post-debate analysis with radio journalists and commentators Peter B. Collins and Jackie Schechner, and of course our own Desi Doyen. I want to get to some of the climate change related issues. There was a lot of them, Desi Doyen, surprisingly. We've got a number of clips, but we probably only have time for one for now, in which they talked about fracking, carbon tax, and everything else. Let's go to clip number 9.
43 lobbyists for the fossil fuel industry maxed out, gave the maximum amount of money to Secretary Clinton's campaign. But that does not mean to say that the lobbyists there thought she was a pretty good bet on this issue. Now, what I think is, when we look at climate change now, we have got to realize that this is a global environmental crisis of unprecedented urgency. I am proud, Wolf, that I have introduced the most comprehensive climate change legislation, including a tax on carbon, something I don't believe Secretary Clinton supports.
I worked with President Obama to bring China and India to the table for the very first time. And I was very proud that President Obama and America led the way to the agreement that was finally reached in Paris. I was surprised and disappointed when Senator Sanders attacked the agreement, said it was not enough, it didn't go far enough.
Let's talk about that. When you were Secretary of State, you also worked hard to expand fracking to countries all over the world. Of course the agreement is a step forward, but you know agreements and I know agreements, there's a lot of paper there. We've got to get beyond paper right now. We have got to lead the world in transforming our energy system, not tomorrow, but yesterday. It means having the guts to take on the fossil fuel industry.
Okay, I'm just going to jump right on in here. You know, New York State has banned fracking, and Hillary Clinton says she supports that. However, her policy is proposed right now is to allow local jurisdictions to decide for themselves. If they want to ban it, they can ban it. If they don't, then they don't have to. Bernie, however, he is going after a total ban across the country. So you can look at that as two major differences between them. Bernie is correct. What the policies are that are out there right now are not going to be far enough, and not having further regulations on the methane emissions, the fugitive methane emissions from fracking, is a huge climate problem. So Just in short, I think what we're looking at here, Hillary is being pragmatic, just like Jackie said. Bernie has the actual idea of how far we have to go, and he's got the boldness on his side.
Jackie Schechner, more on more incremental change versus sea change, pardon the pun, in this particular contest. But the fact that the electorate seems to be going for Hillary Clinton, does that seem to mean that the electorate prefers slow change rather than the political revolution that Bernie Sanders has been calling for?
Well, in terms of climate change, I don't know, because my experience with climate change is that it's very hard for people to wrap their brains around, unfortunately. And when I did a lot of work with Gore's climate reality special, I learned just how important this is and just how big of a problem it is. But I think it's hard for people to understand. So I don't know that it means the electorate is with her, because I'm not so sure they understand the larger implications of things like fracking or not going farther than just putting an agreement on paper. So it's tough to tell, I think, on that particular issue, because it's not reaching into the sort of the day-to-day lives of people on a personal level in a way that's tangible, that they can truly understand.
Well,
So I don't know. I think it's a tough thing to gauge.
Well, to pull a Wolf Blitzer, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it right there and pick that up.
No.
I know. We're going to have to pick that up in the future. Before we get out, Peter B., after you've spent the past hour just beating up mercifully on Hillary Clinton, is there anything nice you might be able to say about her before we go?
I really appreciated that she just busted out in the middle of an answer last night and noted that in all of the debates, no one has raised the issues of abortion rights, the crackdown on Planned Parenthood, the efforts to deny access to contraception and other women's health services. And I applaud her for raising it. The networks are, they should be feeling ashamed of themselves, because they cover all these gotcha questions about qualifications and never get to critical issues that matter a lot to voters.
You're absolutely right. I was happy to see them get to some of those, but not nearly enough, and, too little too late in many regards. The great Peter B. Collins. Check out his podcast at peterbcollins.com on a daily or damn near daily basis. You should also follow him on the Twitters. He is PBCSF. As in San Francisco. And you should follow Jackie Schechner on the Twitters as well. She is Jackie Schechner on Twitter. That's easy. And of course, at jackieschechner.com. Thanks to both of you guys. Great to have you here. And if they debate again, hopefully you will join us again in the not too distant future.
Sounds good.
Thanks to my producer as well, Desi Doyen, to our booking goddess, Cynthia Cohn, and to you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, please download it for free anytime at bradblog.com or over at iTunes. You can find and follow me on the Facebooks and the Twitters as well at The Brad Blog. That's it. Until we meet again, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.